The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. I think a lot of Israeli school children are going to be discovering who they are because yesterday the coronavirus cabinet decided that all children will return back to school in the coming week or two.
Wow.
And also some of the nation's shoppers are going to be discovering who they are because there's going to be a reopening of malls on a pilot program to begin this week as well. And I say all of this against the backdrop of some rising numbers, lots and lots of conspiracy theories about, you know, the reopening now ahead of Hanukkah. There still continues to be a lot of speculation that Hanukkah will see a very firm shutdown, whereas the rest of Europe are trying to reopen over Christmas as much as they can. For Jewish holidays, we're going to shut down. And so apparently school children will be returning to school. I mean, from what I can gather from Israel's education system, it's been kind of a year of almost no learning for many school children. The online concept hasn't been particularly successful at all age groups. And so now children will return back to school. And I think that that really comes against the backdrop of, you know, the schools that have reopened, the classes that have returned have seemed to be okay on the whole. I mean, there have been outbreaks in the schools, but I think the program is going to be half a week for half a class. So certain classes every second day, Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday for half the class, and then Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the other half of the class, at least to try and get some momentum back into the school system. I personally support children getting back to school as soon as possible, but like most people, I just don't really know how to respond to all that's happening around us and to try to maintain health as well as economic sustenance and psychological well-being, and is the vaccine going to come soon enough for us to just grab it before there's this huge spike again? I certainly hope so.
It's fascinating, and I did see an article as well yesterday that Israel or Israelis will be paying more for the vaccine than Europe or America. I'm not sure if you saw that.
What I'm not sure about is what it means to the man in the street, because as a general rule, we've got a health system where people are members
of
the
health, for it anyway.
Medical health organization, and, you know, we pay a certain, percentage of our salary. Some people top up, they pay a little extra to get a slightly better deal, but overall the health care is relatively cheap to the man in the street and quite comprehensive. So when they say that it's going to cost more, does that mean it's going to cost more to the country, to the Ministry of Health, to the medical health organizations, or is that some of that going to come down to the man in the street? Just to give people an idea, when you visit a doctor, it costs 5 shekels for you to visit a doctor, and you're entitled to visit that doctor again for the rest of that same calendar quarter without having to pay an extra 5 shekels. Yeah. And if you need to visit a specialist, then it'll cost you 10 shekels for that calendar quarter. So just to give a sort of order of magnitude of what people pay here, I had my flu vaccine. It cost me nothing extra. That's the kind of medical health system that we run in Israel. But of course, somebody has to pay for it somewhere.
Absolutely. Let's just talk about sticking with health. Israeli Ministry of Health has warned people not to swim in any of the beaches along Israel's Mediterranean coastline. Of course, it is winter, so it's not too horrible an order, I imagine. But what lies behind this warning?
Well, true, it is winter. The temperature today will be in the 20s. And a lot of the children are still not back at school. And indeed, a lot of the parents are not back at work. And for people to try to find entertainment, the beach is not out of the question. I mean, you're right, it is winter, and we have had some quite stormy weather, cooler and stormier weather, but certainly surfers were out in the sea over the past few days after the storm. And there is no real reason why you can't swim in the sea, even though, relatively speaking, it's winter and it's not 30 degrees, which is the temperature of the Mediterranean during the summertime. But it's certainly in the low 20s, low to mid-20s in terms of water temperature, quite acceptable for many people. But unfortunately, we had this major storm over the weekend, very, very heavy rain indeed, thunder, lightning, snow in the Hermon, One of the first major winter storms. And we've had this disaster around the area of Poleg where, unfortunately, the sewage system overflowed into the sea, which was apparently caused by a defective pipe in the nearby waste treatment plant, as a result of which all of Israel's beaches along in the entire, certainly in the central part of the area, central part of the country, and even further afield, have been polluted by sewage, which has run over into the sea from this treatment plant. And the Environmental Protection Agency has said that people have been working at the site in order to try to bring the incident under control and to repair this particular pipe. But in the meantime, unfortunately, the waters have become polluted and people are warned not to swim in the sea at all. I mean, I did see surfers out over the past few days. I'm not quite sure exactly what that means for them. But the storms were very substantial over the weekend. People had to be rescued. Apparently some 50 people needed rescuing in 200 incidents around Israel over the weekend. There were no reports of injuries, but unfortunately we've got this regular flooding that takes place over the winter time when the rains finally come. Classic Israel, 6 months without a drop of rain and then 2 months worth of rain in a day or two. 20, 30, 40 millimeters measured across the country in different places. The Kinneret is doing really well. It has started the winter season already up quite somewhat because of the last year's rainfall, which was more substantial than we've had in many, many years. Apparently, the Kinneret is starting with a level that is its highest for 17 years at the beginning of the winter season. So lots of optimism about our water levels at the moment.
Amazing. Optimism as well about Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, who undertook a secret flight over the weekend to Saudi Arabia, and that's to meet the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. What details do we know about this?
Well, the details we know is that somebody is tracking Prime Minister Netanyahu's flying operations and tactics, right? Because the Prime Minister hired a private plane in order to secretly fly to Saudi Arabia to meet with MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince and a really de facto leader of Saudi Arabia, even though he is the Crown Prince and the Deputy Prime Minister. His father, King Salman, really doesn't seem to be taking much of an active role in the leadership of the country. And so MBS, as we will call him, Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince, is really the de facto leader. And Mike Pompeo was in Israel last week and then flew to Saudi Arabia to meet with MBS. And now we understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu joined him along with a group of Israelis, including the head of the Mossad, Yossi Cohen, including our national security advisor, Meir bin Shabbat, and including Prime Minister Netanyahu's military secretary, Avi Bluth. They all flew on this private plane, and someone managed to track the flight of this plane from Israel to Saudi Arabia, to this place called Naum in Saudi Arabia. And then it didn't stay there very long, according to whoever was tracking the flight, because it returned back to Israel. And then we were told that this is also a plan that Prime Minister Netanyahu happens to have used before. So when you're in the country of technology, then you can't expect to keep things secret of this nature. And so, of course, it's all come out, reports in the Washington Post as well to support it. I'm not exactly sure what the urgency and what the strategy is that lies behind this sudden rush to Saudi Arabia to meet with the Deputy Prime Minister and Crown Prince of MBS. Prime Minister Netanyahu obviously looking for a little bit of good news, something which he might be able to post as a headline in order to support his position. Clearly the Trump administration now into its lame duck period, having finally acknowledged that they're cooperating with the handover to President-elect Joe Biden. Joe Biden himself has announced his foreign policy team. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. But in the meantime, I'm not really quite sure what we think could happen between now and that date in January, when President-elect Joe Biden will be inaugurated as the new president, and then all bets are off in terms of what's happened before, and we'll have to start again in order to develop whatever foreign policy operation is going to happen then. There can be absolutely no doubt that the Saudis do wish to cooperate with Israel, do wish to enter into an agreement of some sort with Israel, because of the threat that Iran presents, not only to Israel, not only to Western countries, but indeed to Saudi Arabia, much, much closer to home. Don't forget the proximity between Saudi and Iran is much, much closer than Iran, for example, to Israel. And so the Saudis certainly feeling under some threat from the Iranian belligerence and their development of nuclear weapons. And they see Israel as an ally to counter the development of whatever is happening in Iran right now. But the Saudis are also very, very cautious about their position as leaders in the Muslim world, and in particular what any relationship with Israel might mean for their position on the Palestinian issue, because there were some sources within Saudi Arabia who were denying any meeting between MBS and Prime Minister Netanyahu and saying that any agreement that Saudi Arabia will sign needs to be in the context of an agreement with the Palestinians. And that came particularly from Prince Faisal, who is also one of the members of the royal family and, you know, a senior person within Saudi Arabia. So still a lot of confusion as to exactly what we're trying to achieve, what the importance of this meeting right now is, whether it was something that's just aimed to prop up Netanyahu's standing on the international stage, on the local stage, or whether there is something that's real that could still happen, potentially before Trump leaves the White House or soon thereafter under the auspices of the new Joe Biden administration. I'm not really quite sure. I think it's a good thing that we're talking to the Saudis, absolutely. What the urgency is right now still remains a little bit of a mystery to me.
Yeah, it's fascinating just to watch how this is playing out and how it will play out. The other thing, of course, that is very important is, as you mentioned, is Joe Biden's foreign policy team. What do we think of it so far?
Well, I think that the jury still remains firmly out on Antony Blinken, who apparently has been appointed or will be appointed as the Secretary of State. I think he's probably the most important name. A lot of speculation about, you know, is he a friend of Israel's or is he not a friend of Israel's? It seems as if overall, from his history, from what's happened up until now, Antony Blinken seems an okay, acceptable sort of name to fill that position. There are other members of the foreign policy team that we will get to know over time and also get to know their position about what, you know, they think about the Israeli situation and potentially what it might mean for future peace agreements and future developments. But most importantly, I think what people are looking at is what is the Joe Biden administration's stance going to be on Iran? That is really of paramount importance to all of us, more important than an agreement with Saudi Arabia, more important than any of the other agreements, because while those agreements present a potential positive impact, something that we could look forward to developing ties with countries that we haven't had before, Iran, of course, represents a real threat. And, of course, the nuclear development program is of major concern. So I think the jury's still out regarding Blinken, regarding the rest of the foreign policy team. But we certainly hope that Joe Biden will view the Iranian situation with the seriousness that we think it deserves.
Yeah, and it does seem as though the signs are there that he will. There's been enough said, hopefully, that he will take other commentators, and I think that's the biggest issue, that there are other commentators in the region, whereas who are very vocal around it. Whereas last time, they were a little bit more, I think, reticent. Or sidelined, exactly. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. And of course, so this is something that we're going to follow very closely. It is 8 o'clock. Antony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow.